guy who's so smart, he's so passionate, and he's so coachable. It's a really special combination. We've probably already talked too much about Big Frank.
He's the type of player that will almost make Dana smile. It's been a long time. I shouldn't have left you without a strong rhyme and step two. Think of how many weeks shows you slept through. Time's up. I'm sorry I kept you. Thinking of this, you keep repeating your miss. The rhyme from the microphone solo with. So you sit by the radio. Hello, and welcome to the Flock Pod. Hashtag, what do we got here? 071. That's we'd be an old podcast if we were a person. Putting numbers on the board.
Yeah, we are. Putting the numbers up, Shane. Putting the numbers up. We just finished watching the women finish their upset victory, I guess, over Georgia.
Go Ducks.
Yeah, big, big upset victory over them.
No, that counts as an upset, beating a 3 seed.
This is true. Yeah, kind of a seeding upset for sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we are hanging out here in the condo. We are, of course, partnered with westcoastcfb.com. Make sure to go check out that beautiful website for all of your West Coast college football needs. The Avataria producers are hanging out here on the couch today. We'll see if we get much action from them. Once again, full disclosure, we recorded a pod yesterday, Shane. We had something we were going to put on wax. I knew you weren't going to say anything about it, so I'm going to say something about it. And we threw it to the wolves. We threw it out.
It happens.
It happens to the best of us.
Poe Buddy's nerfed.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And we wanted to get this game in from today. Kind of made a last-minute call there, a little bit of a Hail Mary call to bring in this Georgia Bulldog game. And I'm glad we did because of the quality of the game that we got overall.
You talked about this a little bit yesterday in the pod that nobody will hear, that we don't get to watch games together and then record a pod. So this is good. We'll have a little bit of a different mindset for this one.
Different rhythm, different vibe. Absolutely. Speaking of vibes, let's give you the vibes for the podcast today. We're going to definitely start by going over the women's win, obviously, as we've already mentioned. We'll jump into a little bit of a broad spectrum look at the women's tournament also, kind of what's going on. Currently watching Northwestern lead Louisville. We'll jump over there to the men's side, do the same thing, give you a little bit of a mirror image. Then after the break, we'll jump into America's new favorite segment, Justin Reads Tweets to Shane. Take a little stroll around the flock, talking about some softball, some baseball, some volleyball. We have some Chris Boucher news that we'll get to also, but that will be at the end of the pod, so make sure to stick around for all of that beautiful coverage. You can find us at The Flock Pod on all of your major social media platforms, as well as your podcast streaming platforms. You can find myself at Coach Justin D on the social media platforms. Shane, tell them where you are.
You can find me at BartenderShane6 on the Twitter and at WakaFlockaShane6 on the gram.
We need to bring in more of that Waka Flocka energy somehow, some way.
That's a tricky one.
Yeah,
that's,
gently.
Yeah.
Gently bring in the Waka Flocka.
Waka Flocka energy, you got to use like a seasoning, like a very strong seasoning.
That's the gif of the guy just going like this. Yeah,
little goes a long ways.
A little bit goes a long ways. Speaking of a little bit goes a long ways, Kelly Graves was in his bag with a little bit of adjustments, but some key adjustments to that Oregon lineup, especially playing a little bit more of that 1-1-3, really committing to that, allowing the guards to get out there and apply ball pressure when necessary, but then also shrink back in and really try to force Georgia to beat the Ducks over the top, which they were incredibly unsuccessful at. I believe going 1-for-11 for behind the 3-point line in that 57-50 loss to the Ducks today.
Yeah, I mean, the poor shooting from Georgia was definitely, I'd say, the thing that really stuck out the most. I mean, their long-range shooting. But what I really appreciated from the Oregon defense and that 1-3-1 zone was their ability to take away shots from the mid-range.
They actually went 1-for-13. Oof. I was wrong. And Ducks shot it pretty well, 5 of 12, 41.7%. Georgia overall from the field was 35%, 21 of 60. So just a great job by the Ducks defensively to kind of slow this game down, make it a little bit more of a half-court battle, to be able to utilize their size inside. Sedona Prince, obviously, with a breakout game.
Career.
Probably her best game as a Duck,
yeah.
Especially on the offensive
basketball
side.
Yeah.
You know, on the offensive side, coming out with 22 points and 5 boards.
And finished with 4 blocks, I believe.
Absolutely. I mean, just the length, using her length. Nyara Sabalish following up with 15 and 9 of her own points and some real key buckets. Some real key buckets where the Ducks just continued to force the ball inside, running some beautiful high-low action. The guards struggled mightily with that Bulldog ball pressure because they were playing like Bulldogs out there, Shane. Mm-hmm. It was really impressive to watch Georgia play, reminding me a lot of that UCLA Bruins squad. Mikesell made some adjustments later on with some of her post-entry passes, going to some more of those bowling-style passes. But the post really did a great job creating the lanes for those passes to even happen.
And both post players in Sedona Prince and Yara Sable were really aggressive, definitely looking for their own shot after they got the ball. A couple times Yara Sable was a little too aggressive early in the game, get a couple offensive fouls.
She got frustrated. She at one point had four turnovers. I'm not sure what she finished with, but you could see the frustration on her face and the way she was playing.
And you could also tell that it was an emphasis for her to try and get her shot up.
Yes.
So it becomes even more frustrating when you start to get those foul calls. A couple of them were, I'd say the officiating as a whole was fairly questionable today. There was a lot of like inconsistent calls.
Inconsistent is the right word for it. It was a little all over the place. The Bulldogs were employing the whole strategy of we're going to foul pretty much every possession and you guys can call what you want to call. The most telling stat I think of the game is the Bulldogs still had three or four fouls to give under the minute mark.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Pretty rare.
Which ended up costing Oregon a possession there. But every time that Oregon stumbled offensively, like in whatever form, whether it was not being able to initiate the sets or rebounding or basically anything on the offensive side, they were able to kind of make up for it defensively. And it was that zone. It was within player-to-player defense. The whole scheme was almost like perfect by Kelly Graves. What he tried to take away from Georgia was perfect to kind of keep them playing left-handed and also just making them uncomfortable when the ball got inside.
It was similar to what the Ducks did to South Dakota by just packing in the paint and saying, okay, if you're going to beat us over the top, we'll clap for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to make threes on us, we'll clap for you. Interesting to see that the Ducks had zero bench points in today's game. T-Mike with 11 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists. Erin Boley with 9 points of her own. Maddie Scherr with 0 points, but 6 assists and some really key deflections and just straight-up steals to keep that Duck defense stymieing what the Bulldogs wanted to do on the offensive side of the ball.
When we saw a lot of Maddie Scherr and Sydney Parrish on the floor together,
yes,
which we haven't seen in a lot of games this season, and their length, I think, was what Kelly Graves was really honing in on to try and really get in those passing lanes and not let Georgia move the ball around just as easily as they would have liked to.
Absolutely. And the frustration started to show on both sides. Georgia's big post definitely had herself a pretty good game. Stady? Is that what we decided?
Stady? Yeah, that's how they were saying it on TV.
Yeah, Jenna Stady, 36 minutes and 18 points.
Yeah, which she led the team in points, and then she led the SEC in blocks. I don't think she was as key defensively as we may have thought coming into this game. But then again, you got Sedona Prince, like we mentioned, having one of her best games ever. And Niara Sable, I mean, she did a good job on Niara Sable. Late in the game, though, is when Niara really started to come alive. And I think it was only 4 players scored in the entire game, and only Niara Sable and Sedona Prince scored in that fourth quarter.
That really a deciding fourth quarter there for the Ducks. They did a great job of attacking the other player being guarded by the Bulldogs. I believe that was Javen Nicholson. She did a good job in the fourth quarter with a couple key deflections herself, but they really tried to attack that second post defender for the Bulldogs as opposed to going at Stady as much as they did in the first half, which was a key point, turning point for the game. So big win for the Ducks. They now move on to face the winner of this game that we're actually watching right now between Northwestern and Louisville. And we're recording about 2:45 today on Wednesday afternoon. And right now, Northwestern with a big lead, 32-16 over the 2-seeded Louisville Cardinal.
They're definitely the more aggressive team in this game. The second half is going to really be the early in the second half, we'll see what happens in this game because Louisville's got to step up and start really showing that they want to be in this.
I am going to shine a little bit of light on myself here in our pod that we recorded yesterday that no longer exists now. I did predict an Oregon victory, 58-54. Pretty darn close. Kind of feeling like I should have put some money down on that for Vegas. But, you know, I like my money. I like my money. I don't really like losing it.
And I went ahead and predicted an Oregon loss, which my streak is staying alive. That's 4 straight Oregon loss predictions that they were able to pull off each one. So I'm also feeling pretty good. Also feeling good that I didn't put any money down on that.
See, I wasn't going to say anything about that. I was just trying to shine light on myself, and Shane, being the self-deprecating person that he is willing to throw himself out there. So good on you, sir. Good on you. Let's go ahead and move over here to the men's side now, Shane. Obviously, they come up with the big victory over the Iowa Hawkeyes, 95-80. A little bit more time now to kind of digest this victory, and it's interesting to look back on it now with another 24 hours. The Ducks with 10-plus dunks in that game. game, 10 plus, I believe, uncontested dunks from the Hawkeyes also. Yeah. Really just seemed to wear out the Hawkeyes in the second half. Interesting now to watch this with the comparison with the women's victory over Georgia, where it was, again, a matter of style makes fights. But Kelly won this game today on the women's side by kind of slowing things down. Mm-hmm. And Dana on the other side with the men really was like, let's speed it up. Let's run all day, gentlemen and mix. Let's see if they can keep up with us.
Yeah, that's great insight. They're basically about as polar opposites as far as a style of basketball mm-hmm. game as possible. Still with great entertainment value in this women's game.
100%.
Knockdown, yeah. Drag out, really went down to the wire.
Well, and almost the same defensive strategy, right? Kelly is employing more of that 1-1-3 half-court defensive zone that comes back from a three-quarter, what's that, a 1-2-1. So it's mm-hmm. it's a very similar style to what Dana's doing, but they're trying to achieve very different things, which as a coach is just really, really fun. Really, really fun.
And one thing I thought was interesting about this Oregon-Iowa matchup that was now yesterday was implementing that full court press. Iowa was able to get some runouts from it and got some easy buckets, but it created this really fast pace to the game, which also kind of took Luka Garza out of it a little bit. Even when Iowa was scoring, they weren't running as much through him. And then later on in the game, as we'll get into the breakdown of this one, Luka, they, you know, really were forcing the ball into Luka Garza inside and letting him get those easy, not easy buckets, but He was getting buckets.
He was eating.
With 38 points.
I mean, in that first half, he was eating. He finishes with 36 points, shot the ball at a very, very high efficiency. Only 9 rebounds. I would have guessed that they would have had a lot more rebounds mm-hmm. than that. I know that offensive rebounding was going to be a big part of that. I think the big stat, though, also is, you know, Joe Wieskamp only coming up with 17 points as their second leading scorer.
Wow, he had 17?
Yeah, it felt like he didn't even have that much, uh-huh. right? The Ducks shoot 55.9% from the field, as the Hawkeyes only shoot 45.6. Again, the three-point shot coming in being really the deciding factor in the game. Each team putting up 25 threes, the Ducks making 11, the Hawkeyes making 8. So, you know, the Hawkeyes make 3 more of those shots. That gives them 89 points. It's a much closer game. You never know how things kind of finish up. Both teams shooting right around 71-72% from the free throw line. The Ducks and Hawkeyes tying overall for reboundings. Reboundings. Look at me.
The reboundings.
Look at me. Look at us, Shane. Look at us. Tying at 34 boards apiece. The Ducks with 25 team assists. So a lot of up and down action. They really were successful in turning this into a pure windshield wiper game. Omarui didn't have as big of an impact as I would have expected on the offensive side with 17 points, but he did have 6 rebounds and 5 assists. Duarte leads the way with 21, followed by LJ. Or excuse me, Duarte with 23, and LJ follows that up with another 21.
It's funny you say that, because I actually thought Eugene Aumarie impacted the game more offensively than I would have predicted.
I thought he was just going to have pure buckets, right? I thought this was going to be his big game with 25, 30 plus, but he did it more from a facilitating standpoint than I expected.
And he also got his a couple times. He went to the kind of jab step fadeaway in the post a few times, which caught, you know, Luka Garza has a lot of skill and has a lot of things going for him, but quickness is not really one of them. So Eugene Aumarie was able to take advantage there. And then on his second jump, going up, getting some offensive rebounds, having that quick leaping ability. So using everything that he had that Luka Garza didn't, I thought he made a really good impact on the game. And then, like you said, kicking the ball out, finding some of those shooters on the outside was a big thing. And then on the adverse side, I thought Iowa was going to have a great day shooting the ball because Oregon was going to collapse the defense around Luka Garza. But rather, he was able to get his, and they took away every other player.
Interesting strategy by Dana, basically saying, we're going to do what we're going to do. We're going to continue to switch. We're going to continue to run our amoeba. We don't care if Will Richardson or Chris Duarte is guarding Luka Garza in the post. They're going to fight. They're going to battle. They're going to scrap. They're going to get around and have that three-quarter front to allow our weak side defender to crash back. I was really impressed with the way Will Richardson attacked the ball a couple times coming over as that weak side defender, also creating a couple steals, creating a couple deflections. Got a foul there also, but you'll eat that foul because mm-hmm. you, as we both know, Dana loves deflections. That's the main statistical category that they really hunt for on the defensive side of the ball. So that was impressive to see. And like you saw, Luka was content to eat. Mm-hmm. He was content to go get his. He really wore out. They tried to move him out to the perimeter later in the game to try to create some more driving lanes. But that Duck defense and then the transition game that they were able to employ, the way LJ was shooting the three ball, the way Will Rich was getting out and really distributing, I believe finishing with seven assists. Yes, seven assists, six rebounds, 19 points, having himself a day also.
Right.
We got the Will Rich sidestep, step back three. It was just on the other side and it wasn't for the game. But again, I'll take credit.
And then do you have Will Rich's shooting numbers up?
They don't give me here his actual shooting numbers.
Because I think he was damn near perfect.
He was pretty efficient. Him and Duarte were both highly efficient, and that's the key. We referenced it in yesterday's pod, and I want to make sure we do it here. Just the evolution of Chris Duarte's game being really exemplified that by that play. He's driving to the left side. He fakes. He gets the defender up in the air, goes into them, banks it off the glass, finishes, gets the and one. The evolution of not only going to that shot, using that shot, but then the celebration afterwards, the emotional outburst, yeah, the pounding of his chest, which, again, this team really began clicking, Shane, when Big Frank came onto this roster. And sometimes when chemistry is off, when you have clicks developing within your team, when you have just whispers going on behind the scenes, sometimes a big boisterous energy, sometimes an extroverted, intelligent kid can be just the thing that this team needs to bring everybody together. And that's really been demonstrated by his bench energy. It's been demonstrated by him being the one that was putting the Iowa, you know, the Ducks beating Iowa and, you know, the Oregon little banner going up there on the board. This team loves Big Frank, and just protect Big Frank at all costs. I don't really know what else to say.
Yeah. He does something too, just like watching him play, is he does like little things that other players are afraid to do because it looks kind of stupid. Like the way he's like putting his hands on the guys, like yelling ball, 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 like extra over the top communicating on defense. A lot of guys, especially with his kind of skill set and his talent, are afraid to do because they don't want to look like they're working too hard and stuff like that. And he'll come in and just bowl in a china shop and kind of wreck people around. And then we did see that too, using him at the end of that game almost as like a closer, as you said. It was really nice to see him come in. Oregon has that lead. It's like, okay, Frank, like, you got all five fouls. Go out there. And I mean, he was trying to swat everything. He was trying to dunk everything. It was fun.
Sometimes a youthful ignorance can be a good thing. You know, sometimes when you don't know you're supposed to be scared, it can be a really good thing. And that's true. Just what, yeah, I think he has, is it's not a, he just doesn't care. Mm-hmm. He's willing to do everything that the coaching staff tells him to do. Like you're saying, hands out, hands up, ball, 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 which is so important on a core culture building concept, you know, to get a big man like that, that the MO on bigs is you usually have to drag the energy out of them.
Right.
Usually big men are a little lethargic. They're, you know, and that's, I'm stereotyping a little bit, but I've also seen it as a coach, and I've seen it across multiple sports where a lot of the times your big men aren't. So when you have the opposite of that, when you've got this guy who's so smart, he's so passionate, and he's so coachable, it's a really special, really special combination. We've probably already talked too much about Big Frank.
He's the type of player that will almost make Dana smile.
Absolutely. He has a lot of the Jordan Bell energy to mm-hmm. him, where it reminds me of when Jordan was hurt and he was on the bench and he was so willing to sacrifice and cheer his other teammates on. You see some of that from Big Frank. So yep,
gotta love it.
Big time victory here for the Ducks. They move on to face USC, who absolutely dismantled Kansas in a rematch. And there's some testiness here going on. We'll get to that a little bit more here in Justin Reed's tweets to Shane. But yeah, there's a little bit of a backstory here, which only enables Dana to have more bulletin board fodder.
And these two teams met not that long ago, in which USC had a very convincing win, which is almost, if looking at it now, almost kind of a good thing. It's that whole, it's hard to beat teams multiple times in the same season, and that's kind of the roadblock when you run into a conference opponent in the tournament, is like, oh, you know, if you already beat them twice, it's that third time that's always kind of hard. But within that, using that matchup, Oregon did a lot of good things in that game, although they did get, I don't want to say blown out, but yeah,
they got blown out. They got run out of the building.
But within that, USC also had a great shooting night that night. Career highs for a player, one of their starters, a guy, blank on his name every time.
Edie.
Yeah, Edie. But then Oregon was also able to kind of take Evan Mobley out of that game. So it'll be really interesting as we have this next matchup if Oregon goes with a similar strategy to eliminate Evan Mobley offensively, or if they go with a little bit more of like this strategy that we saw against Iowa where it's like, let the star eat and let's take care of the rest of the team.
That was one takeaway with that Oregon game is that the bench didn't really contribute a whole lot. It was really the starters that were the deciding factor. So you'd like to see Chandler Lawson be able to contribute a little bit more. Maybe he's that defensive catalyst like he was in the Pac-12 tournament earlier on. So that'll be really interesting to see. We would be remiss if we did not also bring up the Oregon women's victory over the South Dakota Coyotes. We kind of missed that. We got so excited about the Georgia Bulldog game. And we don't have another first-round game to talk about for the men because of obviously what took place
with
the VCU. And again, we send all of that's just a brutal way for a season to end, you know. Shout out to them. Hopefully the let's put them on the non-conference schedule for next year. I think that's a great way to just kind of extend an olive branch to that program, you know. Let's start a home and home with the VCU Rams. I think that would be a fun thing to do.
Yeah, heartbreaker if you're a senior.
Ugh. And as a coach, I that's what I immediately went to, is delivering that message to your team. Your heart's just breaking it inside for yourself, but then you have this other emotional attachment to all the work and effort that's been put forth by your team that you've been witness to all season, and that's just so rough. And you felt the same way for that South Dakota team, you know, senior laden, Shervin, that the big post for them, the emotion that she displayed there at the end of the game. The Ducks dismantled the Coyotes early on. It looked that way for sure, right? I mean, it was a massive lead at halftime, the second quarter being a 9-1, a very weird score.
Yeah, that 1 point coming in at the very end of the quarter too.
But the Ducks also only getting 9 points themselves, and then the interesting situation where the Coyotes outscore the Ducks in both quarters there in the second half, but still lose the game by 20.
Well, and I think it was less of Oregon dismantling South Dakota and almost more of South Dakota dismantling themselves. It was a cold shooting streak that you are never really going to see with a team with that much talent, where they missed 25 straight field goals.
Similar to what you saw from Georgia today. It's very interesting. It's once you're allowed to shoot, you know, when like your defense doesn't respect you as a shooter and you miss a few, it does really start to get into your head, and you start to get into that kind of quicksand mentality that Keanu Reeves best describes in the movie The Replacements. You know, the more you're fighting, the more you're trying to do, the more you're trying to help your teammates, the worse you're actually playing because you get outside of yourself.
Well, it's the three worst words you can hear playing basketball. Let him shoot.
Yeah. Open for a reason.
With us.
And I think we both experienced that. So it's a really, really tough feeling. In particular, now I'm, of course, forgetting her name, but number 32 for South Dakota. Just a rough day for her. I know she had her. Now hold on. I'm going to take the second it takes to look up her name because she deserves the mention on this podcast. Just a rough game for Ms. Kaya Watson.
Yeah,
Kaya Watson really played hard, but just a rough shooting day. And when Sedona Prince is turning her back on you, that's kind of rough. Mm-hmm. That's kind of rough.
And in this game, offensively, Oregon really went to their bread and butter. And we've seen it in these first two matchups now, where they're going to really try and make sure they get post touches early, and then those three-point shots can come a little bit later.
They've found their identity, and that's what we've kind of talked about all season with this team. And Tahina going down, Ms. Pow Pow not being able to play, has really forced the Ducks to play through the twin towers of Sabali and Prince. And we've seen that now pay dividends twice here in the NCAA tournament. How it'll play out here in the Sweet 16 game will be interesting. And speaking of Sedona Prince, we would also be remiss if we didn't talk about how she went viral before the tournament even started.
It was a big week.
With the weight room situation. We don't want to talk about this too much. It's been pretty belabored in the news cycle, but we do want to make sure, I at least want to make sure we get down on wax, that this wasn't just a weight room situation. This was an inequities in regards to different tests. You know, a lot of the testing that was being given to the women wasn't as efficient. It wasn't as quality. There were more issues with inconclusive results. The women not having scheduled outdoor time like the men did to go play spike ball and things like that in a designated outdoor grassy space. The meals being such a massive difference. I mean, the women looked like they were eating Spam covered in like great Alsco gravy or something like that. It was gross.
The video of them Sedona sitting next to T-Mike eating it was hilarious. I mean, it sucks for them, but yeah, it was really funny. And back to your point about the weight room, that really is a tip of the iceberg type situation. Yes. But it was a good way for Sedona to use that with a good, clear visual representation.
100%.
Because all of those other things that you mentioned are definitely the meat of the problem, referring to men and women's sports at the collegiate level and just as a whole in society. But when you're able to see a big weight room in the men's side and then the women's side, a rack full of dumbbells, is a good way to show people, like, here, look, this is the difference. And, like, is the weight room thing the thing we should focus on? Absolutely not. But is that a good way to get it out
draw
to the masses?
Attention. Yeah, 100%.
I thought it was good.
The visual comparison there was very, very strong and very startling, to say the least. And then for Mark Emmert to have the gall, the cojones to come out and say, well, we never intended that to be a weight room. That was just supposed to be just a warm-up room. Okay, right. Well, where's the weight room then?
Yeah, then you're saying you literally decided not to have a weight room.
And there is you know, talk of it that the Sweet 16, there was going to be a lot, but this is basic amateur athlete support from both a physical health, mental health, and just equality.
Yeah.
I mean, and there was a couple, you know, wrestlers that kind of came out and tried to say, well, look at, you know, what we've received and that kind of stuff. And now, if you want to talk about the swag bag, that's one thing, because a lot of that is being given by sponsors. Mm-hmm. That's not basic support for the amateur athlete. The support is the meals. The support is the weight room. The support is the testing. The support is the support for mental health and making sure that you have activities to get them out of their hotel rooms. So there's an argument to be made that, yes, all amateur athletes should have that level of support. And we want them to. Every single, from volleyball to softball to wrestling to all of that, should have that base level of support. And they should be playing in equitable facilities.
Right. And I mean, like, to that wrestler's point, like, yeah, I'm sure you guys do feel like you're getting slighted in a lot of ways. Could you imagine if there was a women's wrestling team?
I mean, that's the other thing, too, is that there's always two sides to the coin, right? Mm-hmm. There's always two sides to the coin. And so much of it starts with representation and availability of content in order to get more viewership, in order to get more revenue, in order to get more sponsors. So it's this snake eating its own tail kind of a situation where if you're not giving proper support from the start, you're creating an inequitable situation. Mm-hmm. So just wanted to get that down on wax and kind of get our viewpoint on it. We don't want to take away from what's happening on the court with what these athletes are able to accomplish, but it's impossible to not see how every single NCAA athlete is being used.
Yeah.
Is being, what's the word I'm looking for here, Shane? It's marketed and monetized, and how, you know, billionaire male pockets continue to get fatter from the work of these amateur athletes. That's a guys that cannot be that elephant in the room is only getting brighter and bigger and pinker.
Yeah. I mean, the more that it's being kind of shown what college athletics is really like, is getting worse and worse and worse for college athletics. Yeah,
absolutely. So goodbye NCAA in about 10 years. But
well,
let's move on.
As we know it.
Yeah, let's talk about some happier subjects. Let's move on. So it looks as if Oregon women play the winner of this Northwestern Louisville game. And then the Oregon men, they know who their matchup is. That will be USC. And that's Sunday night. Let me get over here and just double check the time just to be sure, so I give the right time to the people. We want to make sure that we're giving the right time to the people, Shane. The people will get mad.
Twitter will
get mad. It's been known to happen. A 6:45 scheduled start time. Obviously, tourney tips are always up to a little bit of a
usually a little
there.
Bit later. Yep. Yeah,
so we'll see what happens.
Depending on what happens,
we shall see what happens. Any other kind of general tournament takes you want to throw out here for the men's or women's side, Shane?
One thing that you mentioned briefly a little bit ago, Frank Kepnong putting the Oregon tape up with their name on was just a fantastic moment, a very heartfelt moment. And then on the same flip of the coin, at the end of the Oregon-South Dakota game, Erin Boley with her post-game interview, which she definitely deserved, had one of the better games that we've seen her play out in this whole season. But as she's being interviewed, the whole team coming over and standing in front of her, which you could only see when the camera panned over to show it. But as she tried to conduct the end of her interview, and then the team coming over, doing jumping up with her and doing all that stuff, it was really nice to see these two players be the catalysts on each side of the coin to just be these like emotional leaders slash, you know, team favorites. You could really see the team rallying around them. And within that, you get a lot more continuity within yourselves, yeah, rallying around those two players. That was just something I wanted to mention. Those two moments were heartwarming, fuzzy, good feeling moments that we really need to focus on, especially in these
more
times.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's the madness, Shane. It's the March Madness. This is one thing that I think all of America could come together and appreciate and enjoy, mm-hmm, just on a very basic sports fan level. One of the reasons why the women's team was rushing Erin Bulley the way that they did is she surpassed 1,000 points in, sure, her career, yep, here at Oregon, putting herself, you know, into the record books for Oregon. I'm sure not the last time here,
mm-hmm, in three seasons too. Played, yeah, that first season. Impressive. Notre Dame.
Impressive. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's been interesting how on the women's side, we've only seen a few upsets. I mean, going completely chalk that first day. So that was fascinating.
Yeah.
This would obviously be a big time upset for Northwestern to beat Louisville. Now Oregon beating Georgia. There's been some other things that on paper have looked like upsets. On the men's side, it's been shenanigans. Shane, chaos. It's been chaos. It's been the chaos meme, which I love. It's been really, really fun. You know, teams like Ohio, Oral Roberts, my favorite, ACU, beating Texas, and we getting our Paul Heupler moment. Shout out, Paul Heupler. Please listen to our podcast now. That's the next step, sir.
That would be awesome.
But we are a Paul Heupler stan account. We will forever be a Paul Heupler fan. Unfortunate now that they are knocked out of the tournament with UCLA playing the big bully card there and knocking them out. But some good storylines, some fun video clips already generated from this tournament.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Loyola Chicago having another run as they did, what was that, 3 years ago?
Okay, Shane, I want to explain something to you. Okay, so Loyola Chicago, they have Sister Jean, right?
Yep.
A, they scheduled them to play on a Sunday. You think Sister Jean's losing on a Sunday? That's not going to happen. But B, the more interesting point here, a little nerd kind of crossover here. So Professor McGonagall in the old Harry Potter universe was one of the professors there at good old Hogwarts. And she was known to try to help out her Quidditch team as much as possible by giving, you know, special brooms to Harry so he could fly faster and trying to give them every competitive advantage. May have been gambling on these matches, may have been making a little bit of money on the side. Who's to say? Who knows?
She's the Pete Rose of Quidditch?
A little bit. But yeah, who's also to say, Shane, that she didn't at some point turn into Sister Jean? She transfers over into the, you know, muggle realm, the human realm over here on this side. Shane is rolling his eyes so hard over here. This is making me so happy. This is such a fun conversation. They even have, I mean, Loyola Chicago even has the same colors as Gryffindor, Shane. It's what's happened. It's the only thing that makes sense is that Professor McGonagall turned into Sister Jean. She created the school of Loyola Chicago, and here we are. They're back in the Sweet 16.
It's amazing with all the mispronunciations we've had on this podcast. Those last three sentences that you just rattled off with all that heebie-jeebie McGoogle gobble talk was impressive. I mean,
impressive.
I don't even know which of that was English. Which is it? I know Quidditch is the game where they like ride brooms and try, yep, and like dunk balls, yep, into like floating hoops.
Mm-hmm. Pretty so much. It's kind of like that. You're going after the, you know, you're the seeker. You're going after. It's a fun game, Shane. You should look into the Harry Potter universe.
Is
I think
it a
you'd
lot?
Appreciate it.
Is it like polo? Mm-hmm.
Kinda. Yeah, kind of. It's like
or is
soccer.
It more like lacrosse?
It's like imagine like soccer, but for witches and wizards. You know, if they could like fly around and have magic and stuff like that.
I'm out.
Yeah, they're flying after the snitch, trying to find the snitch, Shane.
Yeah.
All right. So
whatever
I think
you say, bro.
We've gone pretty long here on the first half of the podcast. Make sure to stick around for, of course, America's favorite segment, Justin Reed's Tweets to Shane. But we'll also take our patented walk around the flock to give some shine to softball, baseball, volleyball, and flock pod favorite, Chris Boucher. Make sure to stick around. It was all a dream.
I used to read Word Up magazine.
I feel like there's some good content with us like playing a game of the old NCAA football against each other. and okay. like and like getting our Twitter, our amazing Twitter fans to like pick our teams for us. I feel like there's something here. I feel like there's something to be like worked out.
We can lean into that for sure. Plus, it means we get to play some NCAA football.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Let's just, for the podcast, sweetie.
Yeah, we have to. It's babe, you wouldn't understand. We have to do it.
I don't really even want to. It's like the people, they want it.
Let's go over to Justin's and play. Oh, I'll bring my copy of 2010. We'll play that game afterwards. We have to do it.
Maybe I don't remember.
Have you seen
now.
the last? NCAA football made for PlayStation 2. I think it was 2013 or 14.
14, you could play also on the PS3.
And dude, those
it sells for like $200.
Yeah, I was like, God damn.
Well, even my the NBA Street Volume 2 that I bought, I paid $40, $45 for.
Jesus. Yeah,
but I love that game. I'm so happy I bought that game.
One of my best friends was in his parents' attic looking for Pokemon cards because of how much they've been selling for. But he did find like a almost, well, you'll hate this, but an almost brand new LeBron James jersey.
Drink.
From his rookie year.
Drink.
And then it got us talking about how like that was in like, we were in eighth grade and we were talking on the phone watching LeBron's first game, like on like landline phones, and how we used to just like call our friends and watch TV.
Yeah, just to have that we've always wanted that community experience. We've always wanted that like second screen kind of experience. I mean, that's basically what Twitter has now turned into.
That's
like
what,
when you call your
like,
buddy.
I was like, dude, you should have a Twitter because that's essentially what everybody does.
It's amazing how many people here don't have Twitter.
I'm like, you're one of the only people I know that I actually know that I follow on Twitter.
Hello. Welcome back here to the beautiful condo. We are, of course, still watching that Northwestern Louisville game, so this might even wrap up while we're on the podcast. But we are going to move along. We have a fun America's favorite segment, Justin Reads Tweets to Shane, and then we'll, of course, take our walk around the flock. It's March Madness. Just a beautiful time. Like, if you don't love these, like, 2 weeks, like, you just don't love sports.
True.
Like, I don't even know what to say to people.
I've even, so my wife and I filled out a bracket, and we have, like, a little bet going within ourselves. Like, a loser has to make the other person, like, their favorite meal for dinner.
Oh, it's perfect.
And
yeah.
She's gotten so jazzed up about brackets. She was, like, talking about, like, reality shows this morning. She was like, no, for like the challenge and like Temptation Island, we need to make brackets so we can fill them out and then we can keep track and then we can add up our scores at the end. She's so hooked. This is the first year she ever filled out a bracket. I mean, we did like kind of a joke one last year on the men's side. But
it
she didn't
spreads.
Really, yeah.
You love to see it spread.
Like, how can we do this more often? What other things can this apply to?
The madness of March. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So let's go ahead and jump right in here to our favorite segment. Our first tweet is kind of duck royalty. It's kind of what it's turning into, especially after today's game, Shane. So this tweet is a retweet. The original tweet coming from Carly Ebasuya.
Ooh, nice work.
That is, and of course, been retweeted here by MGP at Michael Pittman. He says, "Let's go!" Smiley face emoji, 1-0. Now, of course, 2-0 in the tournament. At this time, 1-0. And then Carly, the original tweet, she says, "Micah Pittman is here supporting his girlfriend Maddie, wearing an Oregon." Oh, there went the screen. Gosh darn it. Wearing an Oregon B-ball jersey that says "My Girl Number 23" on the back. You love to see it, Shane. You love to see the two sports out there supporting each other. And we're developing some Oregon royalty.
Yeah, this Oregon power couple, both coming in, highly touted freshmen, having successful first years in the collegiate sports and a very rocky freshman season.
Yes,
and,
for Micah, like, yeah.
It's good to see them, you know, supporting each other. And well, I guess for everybody.
Well, I was going to say, rocky freshman season for everybody. You're 100%.
Yeah, I mean, not as much as, like, success or failure on the field, but as much more like, just like, oh, yeah, I'm in college, and I have to stay in my room all the time and see no one. I feel for him that
if
aspect.
If Eugene Winters weren't depressing enough.
Yeah. Now I get to stay inside, play NCAA football. Cool to see him supporting her. It reminded me a lot of being in high school, and you see, you know, the person with their significant other in the crowd wearing their alternate jersey or home versus away jersey out there, and you know, it just gives you a sense of I don't know, like love is in the air.
They're kids. It is going into spring. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is going into spring, but yes, they are still kids at the end of the day, amateur athletes. That's what's fun about it. So good for Mike out there supporting Maddie, and again, another big win for Maddie today in that Oregon women's basketball squad. Moving on. This next tweet comes from, I'm going to guess, Ryan Karchchi. We are at Ryan underscore K-A-R-T-J-E. That's a tough one.
That is. That's probably got multiple pronunciations.
That's a tough one. Yep. He tweets, Isaiah Mobley on Oregon, quote, they've been on a roll. I don't want to say they're necessarily they've got luck. They're a good team, but they stole the Pac-12 championship from us. Strong words, Shane.
Stole is a strong way of putting it.
Stole is a strong word.
I mean, had USC won more games.
Maybe don't get blown out by Utah.
That, you know, that would solve that problem.
Maybe don't.
And then that's like, I love the way he says, like, I don't want to call him lucky. Which, so you are. So you,
but
you,
I do want to call
him. Like, so you're, in that's a sense, the classic. Just calling him lucky. Like, that's, oh, I don't want to say that.
No disrespect, but.
But you're an idiot.
But I'm about to disrespect you. So be ready for that. I'm just going to backhand this compliment.
I said with all due respect, that doesn't mean you can just say whatever you want. It sure as heck does in the Geneva Convention.
Just one more reason why I'm so happy to have a coach like Dana Altman here at Oregon, because you know a quote like this would never come out of one of the Duck players. A quote like what Mick Cronin was saying, you know, when UCLA was going into the tournament, will never come out about, oh, we should be playing so-and-so. It's a, we're going to play anywhere. We're going to play anybody. We're going to play at any time. We don't care. We're going to show up and we're going to beat you because we're simply going to be better than you on that day.
And this does create a little bit of bulletin board material for the Oregon.
Love to see it.
For the Oregon team to go ahead and put up in their locker room, and as if they didn't have enough inspiration already with the way that the season went and the way that, like, USC Twitter kind of, like, not letting this shit go at all with, like,
oh, there's deep conspiracy Twitters in USC Twitter. I mean, let's be real here. Did you expect a college that goes by the University of Spoiled Children to let something like this go easily?
It's a very spoiled child move.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, it's preposterous that you're going to lose to Utah like that, and then you're going to blame some deep conspiracy about how the Ducks had injuries and so they faked a second COVID shutdown for so-and-so and blah, blah, blah. Like, get over it. Just
nobody
get over
was
it.
Nobody was faking COVID shutdown. These kids wanted to play. Everybody exactly. wanted to play every game that they could. There's no way, like, oh, you know, if we strategically all get COVID right now, or say we all have COVID or whatever. And then on top of that, do you think with Isaiah Mobley saying this, that, like, right afterwards, Evan Mobley was like, bro.
One, it's like, you beat us the last time we played. Why aren't you just like, yeah, we're ready for them?
Uh-huh. Like, yeah, like, hey, we're going to go out and prove that we were the best team in the Pac-12.
Exactly. There's such a better mindset that you can kind of spin onto this. So that's going to be a really fun game Sunday night.
Maybe that's why they didn't go to school like Oregon.
Maybe. Yeah. Are you working Sunday night?
Yeah. So if you want to watch the game, come on down to Scribbles Bistro and Deli.
Shameless plug.
Watch the game with me. Drink some beers. We'll talk about some hoops. It'll be fun.
Shameless plug for good old Scribs. Absolutely. Moving on. Our next tweet. We try to do, you know, two Duck related and then, you know, try to go out here. But I couldn't get out of March Madness, Shane. I could not get out of March Madness. So I went with Mr. March himself, John Rothstein. And, I mean, the Pac-12, it's no secret that they've been destroying the NCAA tournament. They've been shellacking teams,
great word,
if you will. Love that word. And Mr. John Rothstein, at John Rothstein, he tweets, simply, Bill Walton was right.
You know, I will, this will be like my very rare pro Bill Walton.
Get the video team ready.
My pro Bill Walton segment. And, you know, with the Pac-12 success and the lack of success from the conferences that we thought were going to really run through.
Big 10, we're looking at you. Big 12, we're looking at you.
Exactly. Yeah, Bill Walton was right. Bill Walton's got to be happy. We know watching these Pac-12 games, he's got to be smiling, you know, walking around the house talking about Rivers and such.
Bill Walton is shirtless in a field somewhere, barefoot, walking around, commenting on the beautiful, majestic scenery that he has around him and these beautiful flowers that are coming up. Look at the butterflies, sweetheart. Look at the beautiful butterflies. It's a beautiful day in the Pacific Northwest in the Conference of Champions. I got really too hot there. I'm probably gonna. I got to work on my impressions.
That was almost like a Bill Walton, Dana Altman kind of hybrid.
I've been working on the two of them together, and my Dana's all right. You know, the kids are playing hard, Shane. They're doing what they got to do. We knocked down more shots than the other team. That's really what it came down to today.
People at home can't see this, but when Justin does his Dana Altman, he does this great shit-eating grin.
He barely moves his mouth when he talks, and so I try to mimic it. But yeah, we're going to keep workshopping
it. You just look so happy when you do
it. We're going to get better. It's fun. It's fun, Shane. It's all about entertaining the people. It's giving the people what they want. That's what we're here to do. Shout out Jalen and Jacoby. The podfather, some of our pod, that's maybe what we should do also is create like a podcast hall of fame. Like, who are some of the people that got us into podcasts? Maybe that's some good spring summer content.
Yeah, Jalen and Jacoby used to be my jam.
Yeah, I don't listen to them at all anymore.
Well, now they have the whole TV parameters. They used to play all the music back when it was free and everything, and they didn't have to. So there was a lot, and Jalen Rose's hot takes have definitely gotten a little cooler.
Well, it's just interesting how your listening taste changed too. Like, my podcast rotation has changed a lot over the last 6 months. So
yeah, Jalen and Jacoby used to say some shit too back when they were on their 2 a.m. time slot.
Bro, like, I got a bat right over there. I'll grab my bat right now. Don't tempt me. All right, moving on. Let's go ahead and take our walk around the flock, Shane, where we try to shine the spotlight on some of those sports that would be considered the true essence, if you will, of college athletics at its best.
On your left. On your left.
Uh-huh, on my left. Got it. Don't say it. Don't you say it.
On your left.
Come on!
What better place to start than right now with the number 3 ranked University of Oregon softball team, 20-1 overall, coming off a fresh 4-game sweep of those Utah Running Utes.
Yeah, I mean, Oregon softball definitely overachieving a little bit. I think that we kind of predicted that they would float around within the top 10. I mean,
they're incredibly overachieving. I mean, they only have one loss right now to UCLA, who's ranked ahead of them, and then Oklahoma ranked at number 1. This is really impressive by Melissa Lombardi to get this program already back to where Mike White had it for years and years before the program exodus that took place when he left to go to Texas. Melissa also just doing a phenomenal job of keeping the energy high. Embracing what some of her better players and what some of her team leaders bring to the table and allowing those players to be themselves.
Let Haley be Haley. You know, she's taken that mantra and turned it into a coaching philosophy.
Absolutely. It's lovely to see. It's great to see. And it does look as if they may be allowing fans, some sparse fans here soon, to some of these outdoor sports. So keep an eye out for that. We may be able to return to the Jane soon, which would be great. It'd be great to go watch the squad in person.
Awesome to get to see Haley play in person one more time.
Yes, and I'm going to pull up. I thought I had their schedule here pulled up in front of me, and of course I don't, but let's get there. This is just great. I'm leaving all of this in. This is just wonderful, wonderful podcast. Right now, so the Ducks will have a 3-game series here against Loyola Marymount, it looks like, starting on Friday. Little step out of conference, and then they'll get ready for a Platypus Cup 4-game series that next weekend up against the Beavs. So shout out, should be a little bit, I mean, you never want to say an easier series, but I mean, getting out of the Pac-12 is probably going to be easier unless you're playing Oklahoma right now when it comes to Pac-12 softball.
That is the trap, though. I mean, that's why these series and these games become that important. It's an exercise in maintaining that laser focus no matter who your opponent is, especially when you know that most of your Pac-12 opponents are going to be in that top 25. I mean, when you go and you look at those rankings, it's Pac-12. Big 12, SEC, pretty much across the board, with a couple here and there outliers.
This is exciting. I'm going to bookmark this right now because they did mention that fans could potentially return to games. UCLA in town for a 4-game series starting on April 9th. Just want to bookmark that because we may be able to return to some games. That would be really fun.
That would definitely be the series to go to, as Oregon came out 2-1 in their first 3-game series with UCLA. And I believe they're still ranked number 1, right?
Oklahoma's 1, UCLA's 2. Okay. So, yeah, they're right up there up top. So, moving on. We're going to jump over here to the other diamond, the baseball diamond, where the Oregon Ducks baseball squad has risen up to as high as number 13 in the plethora of different rankings that exist out there. We're going to go with the highest one right now, fresh off of a 10-1 victory yesterday over the Portland Pilots, who came down for a little step out of conference for the Ducks. They now move on to Tucson, as I like to call it, on Friday to face off against the number 21 Arizona Wildcats.
Another team that I feel like is overachieving.
Coach Waz, I mean, just beautiful stuff. You love to see what they're able to do right now.
Kenyon Jovan has been consistent with the bat. He's been
Jovan,
like
go boom!
The power behind the plate. And then in this last series, this last weekend against Arizona State, we saw Robbie Ashford start to kind of show what he can do on the base paths a little bit, drawing a walk, stealing second, third
base. Creating a little
bit
of havoc out there, absolutely.
Yeah, before coming home with a sacrifice fly with our little insurance run at the end of that game. So not only showing what he can do with the leather out in center field, but also showing that he's going to be a menace on the base paths as well.
Another team that hopefully we can return to watching in person. We'll look out for that. They return home on April 1st for a 4-game series with New Mexico State. So let's keep a lookout on when we can actually return and get out there to watch some games, because we definitely want to get out there and support these spring sports as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And when that opportunity presents itself, let's definitely take advantage of
it. Yeah, give them some energy to feed off of, as they've so far in the first half these seasons had to manufacture their own energy. I'm sure that that's getting a little old.
That's one of the last things we were able to do. We went and watched the Duck baseball team play, what's that, almost 2 years ago now. You know,
God,
that was a long time ago, and that couple was in front of us reading their books.
Yeah, that was so weird. I was like, why are you here?
But who doesn't love, you know, sitting in the sun, eating a hot dog and watching some baseball and softball? Mm-hmm. It's good stuff.
Man, I had two of those big old hot dogs that game,
too. Good times.
Too.
Good times.
So much fun in the moment. Later on, driving home, just like, oh, like, bad what did
decisions.
I do to myself?
Bad decisions. Oh, what a pass. Yeah, Northwestern's having some trouble now. All right, so we are going to jump over here to volleyball. The 11-3 Oregon Ducks, fresh off of a 2-0 series sweep in the Platypus Cup over the Oregon State Beavers. They will, of course, take on Cal this weekend with, what's that, 4 games left on their schedule before they wrap up the season.
Yeah, coming to a close here. They've had a great season as well, kind of sounding like a broken record.
Really
with
efficient.
The overachieving.
Really efficient, yes.
With the last team that played with the departure of some all-time greats, one being Willow Johnson, the daughter of Randy Johnson, a lot of people looked at this team as, you know, maybe a rebuilding year or kind of a year to just reload, and instead Brooke Neulever has turned around and had one of the all-time great seasons for an Oregon volleyball player, and the whole team has kind of manufactured a strategy around her to really let her shine, but with also giving her a lot of support. So she's looking at, you know, potentially like National Player of the Year consideration. I don't know if she'll take it home.
Yeah, that volleyball squad's also rising in the rankings. I'm trying to find it here
raising
right now.
Raising in the rankings.
Raising in the rankings. So Ducks are currently ranked 16th. They are followed by 17th UCLA. So
Washington's up there in the rankings as
well. Washington and Washington State both. Yeah, Washington State's at 13. Washington's at 8. Number one team in the country now is Wisconsin. Definitely would not have guessed that. I remember Penn State was on that massive volleyball run there for years and years, which was the only representation I remember from the Big Ten. But definitely want to give volleyball a shout out. Real quick, also, I also want to give the Oregon soccer team a shout out. They are now 4-3-2 overall on the season, fresh off of a March 19th victory, 2-0 over the Beavers. Another victory in the Platypus Cup. We need to see, I believe the Ducks are just wiping the floor with the Beavers this year from that perspective.
The Platypus scoreboard is definitely Oregon heavy. And then something that is worth mentioning was, I think this was the first year ever that Oregon and Oregon State men basketball both made the Sweet 16.
Yeah, we did forget. We neglected to mention that earlier on in the podcast. Yeah, first time ever. They've even made the second weekend. And now both teams also into the Sweet 16. So really, really impressed. Yeah, we didn't talk about the Beavers at all earlier. But yeah, big time matchup, big time multiple upsets for them. The latest being, of course, over the Oklahoma State Cowboys and Cade Cunningham, sending him home to prepare for the draft.
Justin's Oklahoma State Cowboys.
Yeah, I was bummed. But he gave me some Michael Beasley vibes there. But we'll get more into that as the draft approaches. But like, getting back to soccer, they do fly down, or I don't know if they're, I'm guessing they're flying down to play Berkeley, the California Bears, this Friday at 7 p.m. Doesn't look like there's a stream available at this time, but make sure to be on the lookout for that. Definitely give that soccer team, also playing really, really well. It seems to be just a broken record here for these spring programs, but really overachieving in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and especially, you know, not having these sports able to play last year, it was a big question mark to see how they were going to look, if players were going to return, if some seniors were going to leave. I mean, that was a big question with Haley Cruz in the last offseason. But it's good to see them not only out there playing, but succeeding and thriving.
I believe that that Allie Cook goal in the Oregon State game that took place this last weekend also made the Sports Center top 10.
Ooh,
so
very
shout
nice.
Out to Allie Cook.
You'd
love to see that. So let's jump out of the college ranks here, per se, and just check in with a Flock Pod favorite, the giant kombucha himself, the slim duck. Chris Boucher getting a shoe deal, Shane, signing with Puma, which makes a lot of sense considering he'd been wearing the Dreamers for the last little while now.
Mm-hmm. And a shoe that I went ahead and ordered when I saw they restocked it when reading the article about Chris Boucher. Yeah, it's good to see him get recognized. I think he's definitely becoming like a basketball nerd's favorite.
Definitely, NBA Twitter loves Chris Boucher. Mm-hmm. Loves Chris Boucher. And, you know, Pascal Siakam's falling in and out of favor here with the Raptors. It'll be interesting to see what they do with the trade deadline approaching fast here. They're really in a weird purgatory right now. A rough season for them, also playing in Tampa Bay. Just really, anytime you're in Tampa for a really long, I've never been to Tampa, but I imagine that's a rough place to be for months, especially when you're in a bubble type of situation.
Yeah, any place that Tom Brady likes, I don't know if I want to be. but yeah, I mean, just especially being away from your home, like you build this life in a city. It's a lot of these Raptors players too have played there for extended time. I mean, Chris Boucher being one of the shortest tenured players on this team.
You're not wrong.
And Chris Boucher, you know, is not one duck that may have a new home here pretty soon with the NBA trade deadline approaching. Bol Bol's name has also been thrown around.
Yeah, that Bol Bol for Ball, that Lonzo Ball trade is an interesting one that you were mentioning to me the other day. So we'll see if that comes through. So shout out Chris Boucher. Definitely want to give him a congratulations. I might have to go try to cop a pair of Dreamers myself just to continue to support the brand. Speaking of, again, Oregon Duck brands out there, go try to cop some top two, not two apparel. My Minion Moore continues to put out some quality content for her company that she's trying to get up off the ground. That's all I got for today, Shane. You got anything else?
I like that you mentioned the top two, not two thing. Somebody said that phrase not too long ago, not talking about the clothing brand, like, and I was like, so I am just like an old guy that's way out of the loop. Like, this is a thing that like a lot of people know about. And yep. I was just like, oh, you know what? And then I went to like, you know, like, be like, I know somebody who has a clothing line with that name. And I'm like, just shut up, Shane. Go wash some dishes.
Good segment of old man Twitter. I do want to shout out, when I went to Best Buy the other day, I saw four pairs of Air Monarchs in the wild, Shane. Four pairs. Also,
how many
shout
had grass
out,
stains on them?
None of them. They were all clean. Two of them were intentional fashion choices. Two were people that were just looking to be comfortable. One of my former players also sent me a message the other day that since he became a dog dad, he decided to buy a pair of Air Monarchs. And he's like, you're right, coach. They're like walking on a cloud. So if we can get an Air Monarch sponsorship here on the podcast, that would be about as good as it gets.
I'd be a little surprised if Nike came in and decided to throw us some
Uncle Phil, some
coin. But yeah, it would be fairly on brand. Last thing I want to get in real quick. I was out running on the Amazon trail yesterday.
Tales from the trail.
I want to get this in that I did PR my 10K.
Yeah, you did. PR, baby.
And in my last mile, I got passed by some of the Oregon track and field members from
the indoor team.
And the ease with which they passed me too, and I noticed that Cole Hawker was out in the lead. He has the big hair and was a lot more easy to recognize, so I threw him a national champs and raised the roof, and they all raised the roof back at me, and so they were celebrating. I think they were probably happy to be noticed out in the wild. They probably don't get as much recognition as around town as their other athletic counterparts.
Just doubling down on the old man stuff with going with raise the roof there too, just like that's good
it
stuff.
It was such an instinctual thing for me. And I'm glad that it was reciprocated, and it wasn't just, because if I would have gotten some side eyes and they all just like take off in a sprint, I probably would have stopped dead in my tracks and just retired from running altogether.
Oh yeah, that would have been an Eeyore meme situation for sure there. But yeah, definitely want to give that Oregon track team all the love possible here in Tracktown USA. It's going to be an exciting summer here also from a track perspective. So we will definitely have some more duck tent and content to follow up with. Last thing here, Dame for MVP.
He's got a serious case.
Tough game last night, losing to Brooklyn. James Harden just got in his bag there. Terry Stotts couldn't quite do enough to overcome it. But it's going to be very interesting to watch this MVP race come down the wire now with Joel Embiid hurt. Yeah, going to town over there. Sokka's just loving that bet. Joel Embiid hurt. LeBron James hurt. Things really up in the air. The James Harden conversation, obviously complicated by his actions, you know, as the season was getting going. How does the media judge that? How does the media judge Jokic and the Nuggets kind of struggling and not really with the overall record that you'd like to see? Let's go, Northwestern. Let's go.
And me, gambling-wise, I got my Jokic MVP bet. I got my Harden MVP bet. I rebought my Halliburton stock 5.5 to 1.
That's not for MVP. That's for Rookie of the Year.
Just for the record. I got my Ben Simmons for Defensive Player of the Year bet up there. Went from 8 to 1 to 3 to 1. I caught Julius Randle at 5.5 to 1 for most improved player. Now he's -135.
Ooh, tasty. That's actually pretty nice right there. So yeah, leaning into our personas a little bit more here. I like it, Shane. We need to do a legitimate degenerate corner. I think Zuko's broken. He's just on the floor upside down over here. I think he's telling us to wrap the podcast up.
The producers are telling us that we are done.
Yeah, time to wrap it up, boys. Time to wrap it up. As always, thank you. We appreciate you. We love you. We out.
Peace.
Yeah. Now wait a minute.
Go Ducks!
Go Ducks!
You've been so good to me. You've been so good to me. You know you make me wanna
shout.
Lift my head up and
shout.
Throw my hands back and
shout.
Come on now,
shout.
Come on now,
shout.
Come on now,
shout.
Come on now,
shout.
Take it easy,
shout.
Take it easy,
shout.
Take it easy,
shout.
Take it easy,
shout.
A little bit softer now,
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 shout.
A little bit softer now.
Shout
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 a little bit.